And we're here on the K&M Podcast. Ken Brown from WGR Radio. Michael here, DetroitLions.com, talking Lions football. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Ken Brown.
Michael, the smell of football is in the air. And we're going to have a special guest today with us from the Detroit Lions media room, from the Pride of Detroit. Jeremy Reisman is on with us, who I was hanging out with this last Friday at the open mini camp day. Hello, Jeremy.
What's up, Key? How you doing, man?
All righty. You see, I got this pep back in my voice now because for like 6 months, you just talk about football, talk about this, talk about this. But now I have seen actual football. I have seen the mountaintop. We have seen pads, cleats, and a football.
Well, can I ask you something, though? You were saying we've got the smell of football, and now we're going to bring in Jeremy. I mean, that doesn't sound good for Jeremy. He sits right behind me for 5 years. I have never detected the smell of football. Jeremy, thanks for showering before you come to work.
I use this pigskin body wash. It's real nice.
Real nice. Well, gentlemen, before we get to the Lions and the rookie mini camp this week, a couple of items. The schedule release will be Wednesday the 15th. I'm assuming it's at 7 or 8 o'clock. It's usually 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock, whatever it is. The first game of the season has been put out by the NFL on Monday morning. And as usual, Kansas City, the champions, play. This time they'll be facing the Baltimore Ravens in a rematch of the AFC Championship game. Any thoughts on that, fellas? Mike, first.
Well, I'm not, you know, I can't say I'm surprised because you want a good matchup, and that's what they got last year with the Detroit Lions. But I think this is a little more high, as going in, it's a little more of a high profile game than Detroit in Kansas City was last year, although it would have become one going through the season, obviously, with the way the Lions, you know, played and the record they posted, 12-5, to get into the playoffs. So, but it's a good matchup of teams with different personalities.
Jeremy.
Yeah, no, I just like the idea of doing an AFC Championship rematch. Those are two teams that probably got a good sense of what the other one is, and the Ravens are going to have a revenge on their mind. So I just like the idea of kind of building up those matchups from last year. There's not going to be a hype around those types of matchups later in the season, so get them out of the way early.
Yeah, I don't mind it, but two of the most overrated teams in the last 5 years to me are the Ravens and the Cowboys. And it's just they get so much hype, and the playoffs come, and or Lamar Jackson gets hurt, and they just fade out. There was no reason in the world they should not have beat Kansas City in that playoff game. I mean, they had everything going for them and just played god-awful football. So until I see it from Baltimore, I don't want to hear it anymore. I'm tired of them, and I'm tired of the Cowboys, but I guess it'll be interesting opening Thursday night for all who care to look at it. Maybe I will. Maybe I won't. I haven't decided yet.
Well, you know, I think the story of the year is going to be whether you will or you won't.
I think there'll be a primetime special on ESPN, NFL Network before they fire everybody on if I'm watching a game. I'm sure that'll happen.
Ken Brown wills.
Matter of fact,
won't.
And Jeremy, I don't know if you know, but this podcast makes more relevance now that the NFL has laid off everybody, so they'll have something else to listen to. There's actually going to be nobody there. Except for Rich Eisen by the time September rolls around.
Rising up those podcast rankings.
That's right. All right, so then, before I even get to the minicamp, let's talk about this. Who would you want to see as the first game for the Lions, and do you want it to be a national game, home or away? This is prediction time, Jeremy. What's your prediction first game you'd like to see, home or away, and Mike, you do it after. I want to hear it.
Hey, I mean, if we're doing an AFC Championship rematch, why not go NFC Championship rematch? Lions got the 49ers on the schedule. Start week one there. While I'd love to kind of have the Lions open up at home, especially after the season that they just had, I think that would be a perfect game. And, you know, if you're a Lions fan, I think this probably gives you the best shot to beat the 49ers while that game is still fresh in the mind of every single Lions player that was on the team last year. So, yeah, let's get the revenge game out of the way here week one, and throw it in prime time too. I'm sure everybody would be eager to see that game, see how the Lions come out after blowing the lead that they did. I think it's a perfect week one opener for both the Lions and for a national audience.
Michael?
Well, Jeremy, I think you've outthought me on that one, so I'm going to have to move to another one. And I would like the Lions and the Rams just because, you know, I think it would be a nice pick. There was a close game at Ford Field last year in the playoffs, and Lions won by a point. You really had to hold them off there at the end. You know you're going to get a big game from the Rams. That's a really, really good improving team. They're going to give the Lions a really tough run. And it'd be a good way to start, good way to know, you know, the Detroit Lions, where they stand, and want to see how their new young defensive backs perform.
So you guys got too much testosterone. I want Lions-Tennessee home game, 1 o'clock on a Sunday. I want a beatdown of epic proportions to start the season. I don't want any type of challenge for that opening game at home. So I just want the worst team on this schedule to be, which is Tennessee. So do that 1 o'clock CBS Sunday the first week, and then you'll be 1-0. We'll have to talk about teams that start 2-0 or start 0-2, that this is their chance of making the playoffs. We don't have to hear that anymore. So let's get that out the way. All those good games you can play later on in the year.
Ken, you're thinking small. You really are. And
like I said, you guys are thinking too. You guys got too much competition. I want a beatdown. I want a 44-6 game. Okay, that's what. Hey, you're paying double for these tickets now. At least you can, you know, get your early beatdown. So, but I hope they just get about 4 or 5 primetime games. I as a fan. It's good to see primetime games, but I like the 1 o'clock Sunday and get it out the way. I know it's not advantageous for, you know, building your brand, but, man, some of these Sundays you wait around for a game at night or Monday night. I just like to play every Sunday at 1 o'clock.
Well, Kenny, you've often chastised me for going back into the history level on things like this. But
yet it doesn't stop you.
But in 1999, the Rams won the Super Bowl, but they played every one of their games at 1 o'clock in the regular season because they'd been so – I think they were 3-13 the season before, and they had just a string of bad seasons, and they didn't play in prime time until the playoffs game.
All right. Well, there you go.
So that's when it counts.
There you go. So we'll know.
Here's the other thing, Ken. There's more where that came from.
as you see, this is what I have to live with every Monday.
Hey, I have to live with it during the season too. I'm in that room with you.
Well, let's get down to the mini camp. The Lions finally showed up for their most showed up. The coach didn't show, but everybody else showed up for the mini camp this week. Ray Agnew led the charge for the pre-camp talk, and then they went out on the field. Mike, I'm just gonna get down to what we saw on the field because you only get that one practice, and it is what it is. But you can look and physically look at some players out there, and for the Lions draft picks, I was kind of impressed. You know, when I went into the draft, Jeremy and Mike, like I told you, they could draft anybody. I wouldn't have cared because I thought the team was pretty much set. And these guys would just be filling guys. And even if they don't help you as starters, you know, they'll build your depth up. But the more I look at what they did during this draft, you know, looking at it a week later, I really feel they set this draft up for success. And I'm talking about taking two corners, taking a couple of linemen that you don't even need this year unless injuries happen, a special teams running back that nobody would have predicted before the draft, and a defensive tackle that's on the short side but quick as hell. So I was impressed with those guys, Jeremy. I'm going to get your impressions on it. And Mike, you can give me yours on the end of it. But what do you expect out of the rookie class, Jeremy?
Yeah, I think outside of Tyrion Arnold, I think it's probably going to be a lot of rotational roles, a lot of sub-packages type of things for a lot of these guys. And that's just kind of naturally what's going to happen when your team is good, is that your rookie class – they're not going to have as big of an impact as they have in previous years. Part of that is because you're drafting later. Part of that is there's just not a lot of starting roles available. But Tyrion Arnold, to me, you know, it's hard to judge a ton based on very limited competition in a rookie mini camp. You know, he's going up against not so great players, and there's not a lot of full speed, you know, reps that they're actually doing in front of us. But I just keep coming away more and more impressed with him as an individual, the way he carries himself. The way he does his media sessions, the way he interacts with his teammates, like he has, to me, future leader written all over him. And I think that line secondary might need someone like that in the long term. So, I think he does probably end training camp with a starting job, whereas, you know, Ennis Rakestraw might be kind of like a backup nickel and a guy who comes in on sub packages. I think Sione Vaki, the special teamer running back, I think he's going to get a ton of he might lead the team in special team snaps this year. And then everyone else is just kind of, like you said, I think they're kind of planning for the future more so with all those guys, which, again, that's something that a good team does so to make sure that they aren't a flash-in-the-pan team.
Michael?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I think if you've got a defensive back, whether preferably a cornerback, but a safety too, but if you've got a defensive back there who, and you're, you know, playing in defense, and you know that he can handle his side of the deal, it really changes things for you. If you have the confidence that, like, he's not going to break down on you, I think it really changes the way you can play all the way around. And, you know, I think, like you said, I think Arnold, we'll see, but from what you see so far, he's that kind of player. But so was Brian Branch a year ago. So I think they've got some young guys, young legs back there in the secondary that can be good for a long time.
Alabama. One thing I did notice, Karen Arnold, the drills and them playing, is that he's noticeably bigger than the second-round pick, Rakers Shaw. And you're just in the shoulders, and he's a solid 6-foot player, which is good. I mean, he's not overly tall, and he's not short, and he's not, you know, stocky. He's a good athlete, and I've noticed in his movement skills. That's one thing. And like I said, I've seen all the rookies, Mike, and you've seen them farther than me. I go back from, you know, Kevin Abrams, Brian Westbrook, Darius Slay, Tease Tabor, Ryan McNeil. I didn't go back that far. I've seen a lot of these guys come in, and he's the most impressive D-back that the Lions have drafted I see come in just by a physical and, you know, mental standpoint so far.
Well, Kenny, I'd like to go back to the defensive backs that I've seen, but we'd be here all day. I'll let it rest with you on that one.
So, but that's good that they did that, because, Mike, you say this all the time, that D-back is the most injured position in football, and you need as many as you can get. You can never have too many.
No, absolutely, and that's been proven there. That's not just my opinion. That's been, you know, that's in the archives, man. That's you're talking about guys who weigh 180 pounds, 190 pounds, taking on sometimes a safety be in on it too, but taking on guys that are outweigh you by sometimes 100 pounds. They leave that kind of stuff. It leaves a mark on you, and it's not a good one.
Exactly. And Jeremy, a lot of people, I listen to talk radio over the weekend, you know, don't ask me why, because I'm stupid, but I am. I don't know why I put myself into this.
This is not exactly breaking news.
I know, but it just infuriates me, so I have to listen. But one of the things where, well, he doesn't run 4.2, so he's not a good cornerback. He's a 4.5, he's a slow. He can't. And they, wait a minute, let me tell you two something. I heard yesterday, Mike, over the weekend, the Lions put out a clip of Terry and Arnold's one interception. It was just a little short clip to say, you know, Terry's first interception. It was a little joke clip. They put it out, right? Mike, do you actually – I saw and heard people were reviewing the play. Like, he's trailing. A play in a mini camp, Mike.
Yeah, you can overanalyze this stuff, Mike, and quite often we do.
Mike, they were analyzing like this was the Super Bowl winning play. I mean, are you guys serious? Is this what we're doing, Jeremy? And you know, you probably heard it too.
Oh yeah, we wrote a whole post on the play just because it was exciting that he got an interception. But of course, a million people are like, "Oh, but he got beat on the route early this guy that no one's ever heard of." The guy actually who quote unquote beat him on the route actually got signed by the Lions. He was a tryout player, and he's been in the league for a couple of years now. But yeah, I mean, I get that there are some people concerned that he ran a 4.51, but like if you look at like his 10-yard split, which I think was a 1.52, was above average. It was good for someone his size. And so, you know, it's just people get obsessed over the 40 time, and then that's how they view everything. They view everything through that lens.
Like the game is a straight line game. The game is a straight line in the blocks game. And like I said, go back and look and see what Darrell Revis ran in his combine. That's all I'm going to say. I'm not even going to sit here and find me a better corner. Just go see what he ran. And I guarantee he wasn't 4.2. But you couldn't get nothing by him. So
yeah, I'm impressed with the 1.52, Jeremy. That's above and beyond.
Yeah.
I might have the sheet in front of me.
Yeah.
Well, that's okay. Well, 1.52. I thought that was the outfield of the Tigers called up over the weekend.
please. Mike, why do you take me off on these? No, and don't mention Pistons lottery anytime during this podcast, because you just want to set me off. I see what you're doing today. Now, I was walking with Dan Miller as we went back to the practice field after Agnew's presser Friday. So we're walking down the around the back. People know you go around Allen Park, you go around the back to the football field from where the area where the media is. And I'm walking and Dan's walking, and all of a sudden we look up and we see a number 59. I mean, we see it from as soon as we turn the corner. And as we get closer, it gets larger and larger. It's like one of those signs, this object may appear bigger, you know, in your rearview mirror. Mike, he's one of the biggest human beings I've ever seen, and that's the fourth-round pick, Genome. Let me get this right because I want to say it right. Genome, what they call him, Gio Manu. And I'm, Giovanni, I guess, is his first name. Jeremy, I don't know if he could play a lick, but it, just put him on the bus, getting off the bus at games, and just stand him on the sideline, you're winning. Because he just looks like he's ready to tear somebody up.
Yeah, the thing that's fascinating to me about him is, yeah, I mean, obviously his height stands out first, but the build is also really impressive. He's not overweight. He's not like one of these guys that I don't know, that you expect to be tall and fat or anything. Like, and some of the pictures of him online, like, there's a reason why this guy was off everyone's radar, and then once they saw him at his pro day, suddenly it was on everybody's radar. And it's just that. He's such a physically imposing figure just from the way that he looks that, yeah, I mean, you could. I think we all sensed it when we walked on the field on Friday where it's just like, oh, this is what they saw. Now I kind of get it.
Yeah. And Mike, I don't know if you saw it or not, but he's not ready to play right now. But they did run him at left tackle. You know, usually you heard about becoming a guard or whatever. He was going to start his career guard or whatever. They threw him right in. Maybe they had to by, you know, position-wise at the three. But they put him right in at left tackle. They put him in at tackle. So, evidently, they're going to groom him at tackle.
Well, I think you got it right, though, your first comment, though. They got to have guys to fill out the positions, and I think that was what it was. They had to fill out left tackle. I mean, they couldn't just have him, you know, standing at left guard or something like that and not have a left tackle. I think that's probably more what it was.
I hope, though. But they also had the left tackle from the practice squad last year, Connor Galvin. And he played left tackle over this guy. And this guy has been on the practice squad for a year and was a left tackle coming out of Baylor. So I think they're going to groom him as a tackle, Mike.
Well, they could. We'll see. We'll find out.
Yeah. Jeremy, any thoughts on Giovanni before we move on?
No, I mean, I just think, you know, I think Ray mentioned they're going to definitely cross-train him a little bit. And I think they like that with pretty much all of their players just so that, you know, they have options available. And I think that's kind of the fascinating thing is thinking about the long term of the offensive line, where it goes. Do you re-sign Taylor Decker? Is Giovanni left tackle next year? Will he be ready by then? I kind of doubt it. So, you know, is he there? What do you do with a guy? You know, they have a couple of young guys, right? They have Craig Mahogany, a guy who's very much capable of starting at the very earliest at 2025. And don't forget Colby Sorzo last year. He's a guy who played tackle, then moved to guard once the Lions got him. Maybe he's a guy that goes back out to tackle. It's really interesting to me to think maybe a year or two down the line of this offensive line, because it could look a lot different.
Yeah. Like I said, these guys you're drafting for the future. It's not like you got to need them in the starting lineup, you know, the first day of camp. I think it's beautiful, and I think they're doing the right thing, and just keep that up. The fourth-round pick I wasn't real happy with when they drafted him, but the more I look back on it now, I think they might have got some value, and that's Sione Vaki, the running back. I'm saying running back from Utah. He was a safety and a running back there. But, man, he is a core special teamer, and he impressed me as a running back, Jeremy, at the first practice. I mean, they weren't tackling, but just he looked like he knew what he was doing as a running back. And I think he's going to see a lot of offense.
Yeah, I'm very curious what they're going to do with him, because obviously they like their top two guys, and they even like Craig Reynolds, I think, their number three. But we know this team values special teams maybe more so than most teams. And so, I mean, that's certainly going to be his first plan of action. But you're right. Like, he did look natural out there at running back. I think he has a very physical downhill running type of style that the Lions are going to fall in love with. It's just a matter of how do you get him on the field? This team has a lot of offensive weapons in the backfield. They have a lot of offensive weapons out wide. I don't know that there's going to be a ton of room for him and a ton of snaps for him in rookie season. But, I wouldn't put it past Ben Johnson to figure something out for him.
Yeah, that's right. Mike, can you get enough touches for three running backs or four running backs in a game now?
Well, you're not going to get a lot. I mean, and you don't want to either. You want your top two guys, you know, Davenport and Jameer. You want those two guys to be carrying the load because that's what you got them for. And they're your two best players. So you want them carrying the ball. You want them producing. You want them ending up in the end zone.
Yeah. Well, like I said, David Montgomery's got to be getting close to 30, though, too, right? So a couple years, you know, like I said, you might transition him in. But it's good to have him. And to me, he catches the ball good, special teams player. With that new funky kickoff, I saw that for the first time during the practice, them trying it. It's all that you learned on special teams, who to put out there, is changing now, because all those little guys now in the end, with that kind of kickoff, you don't do that anymore. You got to put some size out there now because, like Mike, they're 5 yards apart when they start. I don't know if you noticed right. that, Jeremy, that they were putting bigger guys out on that field.
Yeah, and you could see kind of the wheels turning for some of those players too. A couple of them moving before, like, you know, they can't move until the ball is caught, and a couple of them are moving early just because of, probably out of instinct. That's not how these kickoffs has gone for the past however long. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if that strategy shifts as we get closer to training camp here.
Yeah,
and how close are they going to come to the old days when you got, you know, three defensive tackles, you know, breaking the wedge for you? You're not going to see that, are we?
No, but you're going to see those outside guys be like tight ends now. You know,
yeah,
and those guys on the end, they used to be just like wide receivers who would fly down there. You don't need that anymore. You got to make sure your lane is covered because, you know, the guy, once if he gets by your lane, and he's gone. So I'm interested to see that. So I'm ready for that. There was a couple of free agents. We're going to talk about Mahogany because we all know he's good. We talked about him. But there were a couple of interesting non-roster players that stood out to me. Well, non-drafted players that stood out a little bit that might get invitations to camp. Like Jeremy, you were saying that 88 Caden Davis, the one that was in that film with Arnold, he was signed today along with a tight end whose name you probably got there, Jeremy, that came from.
Parker Hesse. I'm not sure how to say his last name.
Yeah, he's a tight end, and he was a D line. He's a tight end at Iowa. Wait a minute, hold on, I'm getting it backwards.
Yeah.
Well, he was at Iowa. He's a defensive lineman. Now he's a tight end in the league, right? Yeah, again, another Matt Nelson story where the Lions
right.
take Iowa players and change positions on them. So
he's been in the league since 2019. He's 28, so it's kind of rare to see a 28-year-old at a rookie minicamp. But when you're just trying out, it doesn't matter where you are in your career. Had a couple decent years at Atlanta over the past 3 years, and I think he's maybe a sneaky candidate to maybe take over Jason Kabinda's role as a fullback if the Lions want a fullback this year.
Yeah, could be happening. Like I said, a couple of the players I noticed, and you might have noticed too, Isaiah Williams from Illinois, who everybody talked about, and he got a big signing bonus. I could tell why. And Mike, I don't know about you, but I think he might have a chance to actually make the roster. I think he's that good, and it's a better than 50-50 chance for me he makes the roster. If not, he'll be a practice squad guy, that'll be a caller. But he looks real good, and he looked good at Illinois. So I don't know if you got the same impression, Jeremy.
Yeah, I mean, I always like to kind of take note of, like, who goes through the drills first, and he was the one that was first every time. So that tells me that the Lions think a lot of him if the signing bonus wasn't enough. But to me, like, really, really soft hands, you know, wasn't the best quarterbacking that we've ever seen. A couple, you know, undrafted tryout guys there. And everything that I don't think I saw him put the ball on the ground once. Very, you know, soft hands in a way that, like, you don't even hear it when it hits his hands because he cradles it in there so well. And like, the athleticism also popped. He's a guy that I think, you know, I think Ray Agnew called him a slot guy. And while obviously the Lions don't have a starting slot need, he's a guy that, you know, could be maybe one of those kind of like long-term Willie Freeman types. You know, if they think they need a backup for someone like Khalif Raymond, or they don't view Khalif Raymond as a guy who's going to be around for a long time, I think he's a guy that can kind of take on that exact role.
Yeah. Mike, what do you think chances of undrafted guys making the team now, 3 years into Brad Holmes? You know, before the first year, you probably could have got two or three guys, you know, that were undrafted making a team. Last year, I think you might have had one, which was Gilmore, and, you know, he really didn't play. He was inactive most weeks. Is it realistic to think undrafted guys are going to make this team, Mike?
I don't think undrafted guys will make it, but maybe one or two. I don't know in any particular, you know, position or not, but you know, maybe a position that they think that they can develop with a player. Obviously, the one we just talked about, who got the big signing bonus, I think he'd be a candidate. They didn't give him the money just because they like him.
Yeah, that's true. He didn't. They didn't do it for his looks, right?
No.
Yeah. Well, like I said, when you got a good roster, these are good problems to have. Rather that than, you know, we need more undrafted guys to make the team. Because I remember some years, man, they were, like, pulling guys off the street after the last cut and starting them the next Sunday. You know, that's just how bad some of these rosters were. And this was a real, real good roster. One last thing before we go, though. Jeremy, you might know more than me because I didn't notice this until I got home. The Matthew Best, the guy they signed from the CFL, was out there as number 95. And I didn't really pay attention to the D lineman or whatever. And I thought it was just rookies. I didn't know he was out there. I guess he is a rookie, but he's played. Did you get any vibe on him as you looked?
A little bit, yeah. I was definitely keeping an eye on him. I kind of, ironically enough, he was going up against Manu a lot, which is funny because obviously two Canadian players. I think the polish was there. Like, you could see he kind of has a good amount of pass rush moves. You know, he's played a lot of professional football, even if it wasn't at the NFL level over at the CFL. He actually got a chance at Bears training camp, I think, 3 years ago. Didn't make the team, obviously. And so I think he's entering now the NFL again, a much different player. I think it's still going to be a pretty big climb for him to – I think he can make the team for sure. I don't know how much playing time he's going to get out of, you know, over a guy like Josh Pascal. You know, they signed Marcus Davenport this offseason as well. He's certainly not going to play above Aiden Hutchinson, but I think he could actually play kind of as a Hutchinson replacement. If the Lions are thinking, you know, Hutchinson played what, like 90% of the snaps or something crazy like that.
Yeah.
If they want to scale that back a little bit, I think he's a guy that could come in and, you know, provide 5-10 snaps a game and give them a little bit of boost.
It'll be interesting to see. All right, Mike, that's about our wrap-up today, Mike and Jeremy. Mike, you got any closing thoughts about rookie camp and then the next couple of weeks when the OTAs start and then on to regular mini camp?
Well, I mean, just based on history and things I've seen over the years, this is a time where somebody always looks good and make the roster. And quite often it's a wide receiver for whatever reason, because you can really see what they do out in the open field and see them catch and run and so on. And then you get to the cut-down dates and all that, and sometimes, or quite not sometimes, but frequently, not so much, and that's where they get separated out. They don't get separated out this early in the camps, but they do as you come along. So, you know, you can get excited about a player, and that's fine. It's great, you know, and that's what you want. But the reality comes down, you know, right in the final cuts, and then you'll find out who you really got out of that group.
Mm-hmm. Closing thoughts there, Jeremy?
Yeah, no, I'm just always excited to go out there and start watching practice because, you know, besides the fact that it's fun to be closer to the NFL season, this team is also in a spot where they're coming in with expectations bigger than maybe we've ever seen in at least my professional lifetime. Maybe yours too, Ken, but I'm not sure about all of us. I'm just excited about that. OTAs get started next week, and we are going to kind of start seeing, like Mike said, how some of these young players stack up against the veterans.
There you go. All right, in my closing thought, I'm going to add one player. I always add a player, an underdog player that I looked at during this mini camp that I'm going to keep an eye on and see. And mine is J.J. Ross, cornerback out of Western Illinois. He's like 6'3", and he kind of popped for me during that practice. And I'm going to keep an eye on him. It's a tough room to make, and it's a tough room to do. But he might even transition this guy into safety. Mike, he's huge, 6'3". So I'm going to keep an eye on him. I'm not saying he's making a team. Don't quote me. But I'm saying I'm keeping an eye on him.
Well, Kenny, if you got a guy who's got size and he can run, it's an asset. It really is. There's a reason these guys make the roster.
That is true. All right, well, I want to thank Jeremy Reisman for coming on with us today. Jeremy, with the pride of Detroit, check his writings out because evidently but now we cannot check his videos out unless he does something. But somehow get back in with the video thing because I always enjoy you and your guys' videos and hope you guys get back together. I thought you guys did solid work, so check out anything Pride of Detroit does, and Jeremy is A1 on that. So, Jeremy, hope you get that back the way it was. If not, Go solo, baby. Go solo. Like the Temptations. Be Eddie Kendricks. Lead the Temptations and go solo.
I appreciate you, KB. Thanks, man.
All right. If Michael Hare, I'll deal with you next week.
If you can.
If I can. The schedule will be out. We'll talk about it. All right. That's the KNN Podcast. Check Michael Hare out on DetroitLions.com. Jeremy Reisman on Pride Detroit and Ken Brown on WGI. We do have Alex Anzalone every week again. We've already made the deal. So we will be having him again this year, Mondays at 4:30. So we got our player. Mike, I know you're excited.
I'm always excited about Alex Anzalone.
Yes, indeedy. And that's the KNN Podcast, and we are out.